You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
This football morning in America. Peter, thanks for joining us. Let me start with Russell Wilson and what you think he was trying to say yesterday, and did he get his message across?
Well, Dan, Russell Wilson never – the fact that he spoke out and mentioned how often he's been sacked, and he's mentioned those kind of things to you, he never talks about that, ever. All he talks about is, I love my offensive line. They're playing their rear ends off. They're great. I love them. The fact that he mentions that, it's not to say you guys stink. It's to tell the front office, John Schneider, Pete Carroll, I want to be protected better. It's not right and it's not fair that I'm not protected better. That's his view. Now, I'm sure that Pete – and I'm sure that the coaches and John Schneider might look at the tape and say, you hold on to the ball too long. Yeah. You know, you take too many desperado chances. Throw the ball in the first row of the bleachers sometimes. And or throw it more often there. But, Dan, this to me was about Russell Wilson saying, going to the Super Bowl on Sunday night, I saw one shot of him. It's funny. When you're at the Super Bowl, which I was, you don't watch TV. So you don't see what anybody sees. I did see one shot of him. And I'll tell you what, he just looked like he ate a turd sandwich. I mean, he was totally this one shot. Yeah. He was just miserable.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want to be at the Super Bowl unless he's playing in it. And I just think this is a guy who's at the midpoint of his career and looks at Tom Brady and says, "Man, why can't I go into a place where the offense is set up for the next 2 or 3 years to maybe win multiple Super Bowls? We're not." And again, I'm totally putting words in Russell Wilson's mouth. I haven't talked to him. I'm just saying what I heard when he talked to you yesterday.
Yeah, I wonder what Seattle does. I wonder what front office or Pete Carroll have to say whenever they get in front of the media.
It's a good question. I don't know the answer to it. I do know that... You know, look, I think John Schneider is a great general manager, not a good one. He's great. But he hasn't drafted great on the offensive line. Yeah. He hasn't solved the offensive line long term. You know, it's just like Belichick and receivers. John and offensive line, it just really hasn't worked. And again, I'm sure that there are issues that I don't understand, okay, because I'm not there every day. But – you know, I do think now, especially they got a new offensive coordinator, Shane Waldron. You know, he hasn't called plays, I don't think, before, to the best of my knowledge. And so, you know, they're counting on sort of the Sean McVay way to work. And I don't know if it's going to work. We'll see. But I sensed dissatisfaction in Russell Wilson that I haven't heard before.
The Eagles situation is a hot mess. Like, this is a soap opera, a local soap opera there, Pete, because I get the feeling the Colts and the Bears might be interested, but not at the asking price. And it feels like the Eagles are asking too much for Carson Wentz. And now you've made Carson walk the plank. He doesn't want to go back where he's not appreciated. Now where does he go? And if you're the Colts or the Bears, what do you really want to offer a guy that you also have to take his salary on as well?
I can tell you that there are people in the NFL, there are of the 31 other teams, without being too specific, that are very interested in Carson Wentz, but very interested at a reasonable price, okay? And what I mean by that is nobody really knows what's reasonable. I quoted a team official this week that after Matthew Stafford, what is a logical price right now for a quarterback? We don't know. I mean, two ones and a three, even though the ones are in the future. But I also think this, Dan, about Carson Wentz. With Matthew Stafford, you sort of know what you're getting.
Yeah.
With Carson Wentz, you have no idea what you're getting. In 2017, he was a top five quarterback in the NFL. In 2018 and 19, pretty good. 2020, an abject disaster. Charges that he's he doesn't like to be coached. I'm not saying uncoachable. It didn't take coaching very well. You know, was at odds with Doug Peterson. Was, you know, and all this stuff. He hasn't done enough in this game to be difficult to work with. He just hasn't. So if you're a team right now, what do you want to pay for him? Really, what do you want to pay for Carson Wentz? If I were the Colts or the Bears, Bears have the 20th pick, Colts have the 21st pick, I'd pay that. But if you want to get much beyond that, I'd say, no thanks, I'll draft somebody and take my chances.
But is there more upside with Carson Wentz or more downside with Carson Wentz if you pick him up?
You have to believe, if you're Frank Reich, the last time Frank Reich was in the building every day with Carson Wentz, he was pure gold. You know, as a player before he got hurt and being coached and everything. Carson, I think Frank Reich would love to coach Carson Wentz again. He told me on my podcast about a month ago, I love Carson Wentz. You know, and so I think he would love, and believe, don't get into the whole tampering thing. Because he said, look, I can't say anything about it, but all I can say is having been with him, I love the guy and I'll always love him. But I do think, Dan, even though he loves him, and I've certainly not talked to him about this, even though he loves him, he's got to have some skepticism, okay, about what exactly he's doing.
Talking to Peter King, NBCSports.com columnist, Football Morning in America. All quiet on the Deshaun Watson front, Pete. Is that good or bad?
You know, Dan, I just think that Nick Caserio does not want probably the biggest decision he ever makes if he decides to trade him. I wrote a week or so ago, I don't mean to be morbid, but you don't want the second paragraph in your obit to be, here's the guy who traded Deshaun Watson. You know, you want your professional reputation to be that he fought like hell to keep Deshaun Watson. It worked, and they were a good franchise. That's what Nick Caserio wants. And I'm sure that's what David Culley wants. But this is an organization that is adrift, totally, absolutely adrift. And when I look at it, Dan, if I had to guess right now, I don't think Deshaun Watson's going to be, unless there's a civil war, I don't think he's going to be traded by the draft. I think they're going to say, you play with us or you don't play.
Yeah, I'm with you. I feel like we're in the minority that Deshaun, you know, it's wishful reporting. Like we want him to move someplace else. It gives us something to talk about. But I think if you're the Texans, unless somebody blows you away, you just say, no, you're our quarterback. We gave you this extension. And you know what? We're going to ride with you, die with you. Let me leave you with this, because we, of course, have to somehow work the Cowboys in this, with the hype video that didn't include Dak Prescott. Peter, what do you make of this?
I don't know. I'm 63 years old, Dan. I don't care. You know, I mean, I guess I should care. People look for clues. Dan, you know what? When I first got in this business and covered the Cincinnati Bengals, you know what I did in the offseason? You know, for a while anyway, I covered college basketball. I covered the Reds as a backup beat writer and everything like that. I wasn't Bengals 24/7, you know, and you know, the problem is now you've got newspapers and websites with three beat people 365 days a year studying, looking for signs, doing all this stuff. And sometimes I'm sure that deep down there's some meeting, like the Cowboys don't know absolutely for sure if Dak Prescott's going to be on the team. I guess that would be the explanation. But honestly, I think any thought that Dak Prescott is not going to be on the team seems utterly preposterous. He's the most popular athlete right now in the state of Texas. And I can't imagine that the Cowboys would be actively considering not bringing him back, even if it's on that onerous second franchise tag.
Drew Brees set to join you guys on Football Night in America, NBC Sports. Do you know anything about this?
I'll be the last one to know. You'll have him on the show, and he'll say, I'm announcing it. But, Dan, I think it's there's no way he's playing next year. You look at, you know, Jay Glazer, for him to say something like that, you know, it isn't a dirty little secret, but I mean, he knows the Saints, like, you know, the Dayton Flyers. I mean, like, he knows them a lot. And for him to say that this is his last game, it's his last game. So in my opinion, I think they're just waiting for the right time to really celebrate the life and times of Drew Brees. And my feeling is he's probably going to be on the NBC set, you know, in August or September. But, you know, that's just my gut feeling.
What do you expect to happen to the Chiefs in the offseason?
Well, I think one of the things, if I were them, one of the things I would really try to do is pay a little bit more attention to the offensive line, because it looks like they were too – and look, you could say this about a lot of teams, but they were two injuries away from absolute disaster. So they've got to backstop their line. I think you'll see Andy Reid, who always pays attention to both lines, both in free agency and the draft. I bet on the first 2 days of the draft, they draft two tackles. That's just my gut feeling. Andy will pay attention to this offensive line, and well, he should. My guess is that Sammy Watkins probably won't be back, but the rest of the team, I think, mostly is going to be back intact.
Did you vote on the Super Bowl MVP?
I did. I voted for Brady.
Was there any consideration given to anybody else?
Definitely so. At the start of the fourth quarter, I wasn't voting for Brady. I was going to vote for Shaq Barrett if the game was three quarters long. And then in the fourth quarter, it got all cloudy, because here comes Ndamukong Suh making two or three big plays. Here comes the rest of their defense. Devin White all over the field. My second choice, I voted for Brady. We had to vote with 4 minutes left in the fourth quarter. We could change, but we had to vote with 4 minutes left in the fourth quarter. I voted for Brady, but at the end, at the very end, I thought very hard about Devin White. And then, you know, he had that late interception. I have some regrets, but not a lot. I mean, Tom Brady was efficient. And plus, here's what it also is, Dan. Tom Brady, think about his value to this team. Why did they really win the Super Bowl? Why? Because Tom Brady came. Tom Brady remade the mental makeup of that team. Tom Brady coached players all through the season. And, you know, Tom Brady also brought the kind of unselfishness. Bruce Arians talked to me about it after the game. Rob Gronkowski, never once. I mean, he had a game where he had zero catches. Hey, Rob, you okay? Yeah, coach, I'm good. I'm good. You know, and so he brought that ethos. Forget what the numbers are. Forget what the stats are. When Devin White in December was complaining about not making the Pro Bowl, he said, hey, D, you know, we're in this for a bigger bowl. You know, and so, like, shut up about your Pro Bowl. Who cares? So I don't feel bad about voting for him at all. Mm. It was very close. The defense probably was more significant in this one game, but who on the defense, you know?
We're going to make a hype video for you, Pete.
Okay. Yeah. I'll take it.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've got to, if you do make a hype video for me, yeah, just make sure you say I'm 63 years old and I don't care about that stuff. So please do that.
Thank you, Pete. Good to talk to you again.
All right, Dan, you take care.
That's Peter King, NBCSports.com columnist and Football Morning in America. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. All right, Tim Kalishaw, Dallas Morning News columnist and star of ESPN's Around the Horn, and a guy who does a great job in breaking down hype videos. That's part of his, that's a side job that he has. And Tim, kind enough to join us from his busy day to let us know why Dak Prescott was not included in the hype video with the Cowboys.
Oh, man, this is the story of the year, I would think, that that didn't happen. You know, I don't know. It certainly doesn't seem like it could happen by accident. Like, did we forget somebody? We got CeeDee Lamb. We got this guy. We got that. We got DeMarcus Lawrence. So the fact that it couldn't happen by accident tells you that it's a little very subtle shot from the Cowboys. They don't have a lot of ammunition in their quiver. So this is their, we're a team here. We're not all about one player. And I don't think it will amount to anything, but it just seems a little petty on their part.
But if you're saying that, Tim, then Jerry Jones or his son Stephen Jones had to know about this.
What did they know and when did they know it?
Yes.
you would think, but...
What's this accomplish?
Nothing. It doesn't accomplish anything. It gets people talking about it, and it gets Cowboy fans scared. Oh, they're really not going to sign Dak. Oh, what are we going to do for a quarterback? Which, you know, that just makes them one of about 22 teams who don't know who their quarterback is. Thanks largely to you, the 22nd was added yesterday. We thought Russell Wilson was fine, the man of the year and all, and now we find out he's got a camp, and his camp doesn't like it there. Way to go.
It feels like this Dak Prescott, and you know how it works in the media, because the Cowboys get clicks, then we're always talking about the Cowboys or Aaron Rodgers or Baker Mayfield. It's same stories over and over and over. If Dak signs the franchise tag, then it stills his story because they didn't get a long-term deal. Or if he signs a long-term deal, then why didn't they do a franchise tag? This is like, this story's not going away no matter what happens with Dak Prescott, whether it's a short-term or long-term deal.
I think if it's a long-term deal, it goes away a little. If it's a franchise deal, no question. That's $37 million. That's 20% of their cap, roughly. We don't know the cap figure. That's way too much money for one player. And so they're in that same kind of ditch that they dug themselves last year when they wouldn't give them a four-year deal, which still makes no sense to anybody.
I know.
They put a line in the sand we didn't know they had. Who knew they had lying about a four-year deal?
But they could have gotten a bargain if they did this when they originally started, right, Tim?
Oh, a long time ago.
Yes.
A long time ago. Yeah, remember, his contract, realistically, they could have redone him. They should have redone him before Zeke. And that seems like ages ago they did Zeke. That's a year and a half ago they did Zeke. So, yeah. Now the one question I would pose is, you know, everything with him has been compared to Wentz and Goff from the same draft class. Those two teams didn't turn out to be happy with those second contracts they did with those players. How much do the Cowboys need to pay attention to that? Not that they're the same player, but there's a lot of fluctuation in those three because there's a lot of second contracts teams get into, and they're like, man, including Zeke's, by the way. Yeah. It's like, why do we do that? That's too much money.
Yeah, I'm with you. I was a vocal critic of signing up Zeke Elliott to a second contract there. But, you know, I'm still trying to figure out, is there any chance the Cowboys move on from Dak Prescott?
I always have to say there's a chance. With Jerry Jones, there's always a chance. I think it's very limited, even though there's some options out there. And you could go say, hey, we could go do a deal and just move on and have more money to spend elsewhere, because we saw last year, this team has a lot of needs. There's a reason they have the 10th pick, and it's not just Dak's injury. But that chance is less than 10%. I think Dak is your quarterback this year.
Yeah. Has anybody heard from Dak?
Not really. He had a second surgery. That's been reported. That's never great. He had a second surgery in December, but I mean, that's a long time from being, you know, anything for this year. But no, he keeps, other than doing commercials, he keeps a fairly low profile.
Any other drama going on in Dallas with the Cowboys that we need to be aware of on this program?
Well, with the Cowboys, you know, the 10th pick, we have that going on. We have some drama with another owner in Dallas, and whether you want to dive into that, I'll leave it up to you. You know, with the Cowboys, it's just...
Well, you can bring up Mark Cuban. Mark Cuban says that, you know, the Mavs aren't going to play the national anthem before the game, and he said he decided this a while ago.
Decided in November. Me, being the intrepid reporter that I am, I've been to two home games. I did not notice that they were not playing the anthem. I did not pick up on that. Now, there's no fans at those games, So it would seem kind of odd, although they still do the rest of the pregame. You know, you get into a very difficult area with people. You know, media tends to be a little cynical. I've been to thousands of games. The anthem is kind of a boring thing that you stand there for. I realize what it means to some people who don't go to a lot of games. But we have to recognize what it means to players in the NBA. And it shouldn't be the story that it will be. But since I don't think anybody else is going to follow his lead, I'll be surprised if they do, then I suspect it will be an ongoing story here.
What's the reaction locally?
Well, I don't think it's this is Dallas, Texas, so I don't think it's overwhelmingly positive. But I would say this, the people that are upset about it, they're not going to Mavericks games anyway. They bailed out on Mark Cuban in the NBA a long time ago. So, the loud voices on Twitter. Now, as far as the people themselves, I suspect most of them just want, you know, Porzingis to stay healthy and Luka to get his triple doubles and get into the playoffs. They really can move on from this. But there's going to be a vocal minority that doesn't go to games that we'll hear from for quite a while.
Are you on Around the Horn today?
I'm taking a day off. I'm going to try to restock these shelves behind me. As you see, they're a little barren. You have this nice, warm, cozy fire.
I know.
Man cave.
That's so sad. Like, there's no awards. There's no, like, there's nothing.
It means I come with no agenda.
Wait a minute. Tim, are you at an IKEA?
No. I'm in a room that it may have been emptied out. Somebody may have left in the last year.
Wait, did she take stuff with her?
Well, it would appear. But no, actually things are okay.
But she left your heart. She didn't take your heart.
No. She's still there. She just doesn't reside here. But
did you have to cut your Around the Horn victories in half and give her half of your Around the Horn victories?
I now have only 240 wins.
Yeah, but if that's the case, then Woody Page would have like 9 victories, right?
Oh yeah, his would be all over the globe. So yeah, that would be a very tenuous thing if we hung on like that. I will be back on Friday. We didn't talk certainly about your Russell Wilson thing yesterday. And real quick, here's what I said about that. We think it's not a big deal, but think about this. Wilson and Mahomes started their careers the same way. In their second and third years as a starter, 2 Super Bowls and won one of them. Wilson hasn't gone to the last 6 NFC title games. What are we thinking if Mahomes doesn't go to any of the next 6 AFC title games? Something has gone really, really wrong in Kansas City. So that's kind of how we should look at that Wilson thing.
Well, you can say is Mahomes the next Tom Brady or the next Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah, right. Yeah. And
what do you think Russell was trying to say, Tim?
What's that?
What do you think Russell Wilson was trying to say? Because he doesn't normally say anything.
Yeah, he certainly didn't say, I love Seattle. That's the farthest thing from my mind. That was not his answer. He gave a big smile and practically thanked you for asking the question. I don't know because you watch them play. He's got receivers. He's got Chris Carson. They move the ball. They score 30, but they give up 30. I mean, I think maybe he wants a better defensive team, but it's not like that team's in shambles. That team's pretty good.
It just feels like management has never truly believed in Russell Wilson. Even though Pete gave him a chance when they signed Matt Flynn from Green Bay, and Pete still, after a big free agent signing, gave Russ that job. So he believed in him then. It's just weird to watch the game plan sometimes because this is the first year they sort of let Russ cook because the other years it was defense and run the football, and then Russ helped us out late in the fourth quarter.
And that's when they won, and now people are probably saying, okay, Russell threw his 600 passes this year, and how'd we do? We need to go back to what we used to be. So I don't know. There's not very many quarterbacks who end up happy in this league. I mean, if you think about who won the Super Bowl and what he had to do a year ago.
Yeah.
So nobody really ends up happy, which is which is kind of a sad state of affairs.
Yeah, he doesn't end his career in Seattle, but then nobody ends their career except
not anymore.
You know, Elway did, but he limped off. He couldn't play anymore.
Yeah. Nobody else has that ending.
Yeah.
Limp off in the Super Bowl.
Hey, we'll be watching on, you know what, as a show of support, I'm not going to watch Around the Horn today or tomorrow. I'm going to gear up.
Take a day off. Come back strong Friday.
Yeah, I will. Thank you, Tim.
All right, thanks, Dan.
That's Tim Kalishaw, Dallas Morning News columnist and star of Around the Horn. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. We're talking about Patrick Mahomes undergoing surgery, turf toe. And we started talking about this about 3 hours ago. And we were just going around the room going, do we know exactly what a turf toe is? Because it gets thrown around a lot. And remember when Deion Sanders was with us at the Super Bowl and he took off his sock and he showed us that toe? That was turf toe that never healed, whether he had surgery on it or not. Jack Lambert, the Pittsburgh Steelers linebacker, I think had turf toe, and it stayed with him the rest of his career. So we thought, you know what, let's bring in somebody who knows what they're talking about. A former NFL offensive lineman, won a Super Bowl with Washington, a Harvard-trained orthopedic, Dr. Mark Addix, and good to have you back on here, Doc. So do you want us to tell you what we think turf toe is, and then you could probably correct us on this?
That'd be great. Let's see what you guys got. Let's see how good you are.
All right, I'm going to start with you, Paulie. What do you think turf toe is?
Like a ligament sprain in the toe that hampers an athlete from pushing off, like sprinting, like running.
All right. Fritz, you got a definition for turf toe?
One's toe is so severely sprained from the pounding on the turf that it does something where it kind of disconnects the toe from the other toes and needs to be surgically fixed or snapped back into place.
All right, Seton?
It is an injury that when, say, like wide receivers are going to get their second foot in and they drag it along the
turf. Oh, that's turf toe.
Their toe is on the turf, and then it gets hurt like that.
Okay.
That's turf toe.
Okay. Oh, I did not look at it that way. Yes, McClellan.
So I thought it was a rug burn style injury for many times. Those are the worst when you're playing with your kids, a rug burn. Mm. But I do believe it's a ligament underneath your toe that connects to the foot.
Okay, let's bring in Doc. And Doc, what exactly is turf toe?
Well, I think example one wins, the ligament injury. So it can be a ligament injury or it can be an injury to the plantar plate, which is almost like a cartilage thing that's on the bottom of the toe. It is the big toe joint, and it rarely is an injury that requires surgery. The vast majority of players don't require surgery. In the NFL, there was a study that was done that had about 30 guys with turf toe injuries that were pretty severe, and only about 10% ended up requiring some surgery. Deion Sanders did require surgery. Deion Sanders' turf toe injury did end his career, essentially. He stuck around for a couple more years, but never really was the same. Antonio Gates had a pretty bad turf toe, had surgery in 2008 and played many years, was very productive after that injury and surgery. So generally speaking, guys do okay. I think Deion was... as his foot would attest, was an extreme case.
Did Mahomes play the Super Bowl with a torn ligament?
Yeah, certainly he did. I mean, in other words, when you have a turf toe injury, there are three grades, grade one, grade two, grade three. It's the same for almost anything. Grade one, just a few of the fibers are torn. Grade two, a bunch more are torn. Grade three, it's completely disruptive. So for someone to need surgery, generally there's got to be a little bone chip that's in the joint, or the toe has to be somewhat unstable, which would tell you that ligament tear had to be pretty significant.
What's the normal timeline for recovery?
So, I mean, the normal timeline for a guy who does not require surgery, generally about 8 weeks. So it's not short, even for guys that don't require surgery. When you do require surgery, it's generally a 4-month recovery. Can go out to 6 months. 4 months would make it easy for him to be back for camp. If it was 6 months, it could eat into the start of the season here.
If it wasn't the Super Bowl, do you think he would have been playing?
I do. I mean, I think Patrick Mahomes is one of those guys who cares so much about the team and his teammates that I think that if he felt that he could help the team, he would be on the field.
But does this last, though, Mark? Is this going to be something that can last? Like, could he have done irreparable harm to this?
Certainly, you can worsen an injury. You can make the ligament tear worse. You can do more damage to the joint. So is it possible that him playing in the AFC Championship and the Super Bowl damaged his joint further? Yes, that is possible. Do I think a well-done surgery should allow him to return to the field and be effective? I expect that. I think that that's how this is going to play out.
But I wonder if there's more damage there than just turf toe, if it's the plate itself. If that's involved in it, not to get too deep into the woods here, but how much more recovery time, how much more severe is this injury?
Well, sometimes you completely disrupt that plantar plate. Sometimes you break the sesamoid bones. There are two little bones that sit under that joint as well. Sometimes you damage the joint, and there's a little bone chip in the joint. So there are a number of things that can complicate this, but all of them shouldn't make his recovery extend out beyond 6 months.
We're finding out Dak Prescott had a second surgery, compound fracture and a dislocation here. How, like, is that normal? And how does that affect him long term?
It's not normal. Without knowing exactly what the surgery that was done, I mean, sometimes they go in to remove some of the hardware. Some of the hardware is symptomatic. Sometimes you go in because people are so stiff that they require a procedure to get rid of some of the scar tissue so that you can have more normal motion. And sometimes after a big fracture dislocation like that, you have to go in later to maybe remove a little bone chip or something that's irritating the joint. So all of those things are not good news, but I think he should be able to return and play well as a quarterback. You know, I mean, if he's a running back or wide receiver, you know, a defensive back, I mean, it's a much bigger deal. Even though he is a somewhat mobile quarterback, I think that he should be able to return and be the old Dak Prescott.
How much progress have we made on Achilles tears?
There are more minimally invasive procedures that are out there now that I think are pretty darn effective. I think that the rehab has become appropriately aggressive. And so I think folks do better now with Achilles ruptures than they did a decade ago. And I think some of it's due to the more minimally invasive surgery, and some of it's due to the more aggressive rehab.
I'm going to open this up to the Danettes. Do you guys have a sports-related question, injury-wise, for Dr. Addix here? Because I had the microfracture surgery of my knee, and it didn't work, but I had six operations. I eventually got a replacement knee. Are they still doing microfracture surgery where they take the drill and go whip it into your knee?
It's much more rarely done. It is sort of a last-ditch effort in a younger patient to try to get some new cartilage to grow. Just so you know, I am in the exact same boat. I had microfracture, a few more surgeries, and I have a total knee too. The end result after microfracture, definitely knee replacement.
My career was never the same after that. You guys have, this is free medical advice, so if you want to take Doc up on this, if you got a question here. McLovin, do you have a question for Doc?
Okay, I'll start. So I have a hip impingement, Doc. Am I making it worse by running? I jog. Am I making it worse, and will I eventually need a hip replacement because I have a hip impingement on my right hip?
All right. So I am 59 years old. I haven't weighed less than 300 pounds in forever. Both my hips, I have impingement. I mean, I avoid positions that cause me pain, right? Most men have FAI, or femoroacetabular impingement, and it does not necessarily mean that you're going to need a joint replacement. Now, I mean, as we age, sometimes we have to change what we do and maybe need to go from running to a bike or running to an elliptical, or, you know, change it up a little bit, cross train a little bit. But no, I wouldn't tell you to necessarily go and have a hip scope to have that impingement removed, because who knows if that will actually make you better. You could end up like Dan here and have four more surgeries and then a hip replacement.
Seton O'Connor.
About 4 years ago, when the Super Bowl was in Houston, we went and shot a bit where all of us went to a spin class. And it was funny because we were all out of shape. Well, most of us were out of shape. Okay, I was out of shape. And while we were doing that, when we were done, sometime later that night, my right knee exploded and was like four times the size it normally is. And I couldn't walk right for about 2 or 3 weeks. And now every time that I go do something, whether it's running or like play soccer with my kid or something, my knee swells up again. Do you think there's something wrong there?
So you were obviously, I think you tried too hard in that spin class. So you were up and out of the saddle and, you know, really, really grinding hard and going after it. Did you win? Did you win out of all the Danettes? Were you the winner?
I sure was not.
No, he was not. No. Do you think he needs surgery? Do you think there's MRI?
Well, all right. So when that happens, it's usually you're grinding some of the cartilage off the ends of your bone. Little pieces of cartilage flake off. The joint gets irritated and swells up. And so now when you're running around playing with the kids, this continues to happen. So, I mean, an MRI would show you whether this was a meniscus tear or more cartilage injury. Very often we have these injections. I call them an oil change. It's hyaluronic acid, and it's like an oil change for the joint. And sometimes that can help protect the cartilage and calm the joint down. But it sounds like you got some wear and tear in there for sure.
Paulie.
Dr. Addicks, I was throwing some weight around last year in the weight room. And like my elbow where the joint is, if I put my arm straight out, it's the top, like the ligament or whatever it is at the top of the joint. And to hold stuff like in your hand, it hurts a lot. And rest, ice, all that stuff didn't help whatsoever. What are your thoughts?
Sounds like tennis elbow. If you stand up and grab a chair and try to pick up a chair by the back of a chair, how's that feel?
Horrendous. Awful.
Did you do it? Okay. Yeah, it's tennis elbow. So the medical term is lateral epicondylitis. Go to your orthopedic surgeon. Let them give you a cortisone injection. You'll be cured.
And we'll save the worst for last. Todd?
Yeah, I got a lot of problems. The bottoms of my feet, I went to a podiatrist recently, but I want to hear what you have to say. Right under the toes, I feel like I'm walking on a bump or like there's a sock stuffed in my shoe, and I'm not sure what's going on. He suggested eventually I may need physical therapy or needles, but what is this bump across right under my toes where it feels like I'm walking on like a little mini pitcher's mound?
You know, I mean, usually that's metatarsalgia. So the better question is, do you feel worse barefoot or do you feel worse with shoes on?
I feel worse with shoes on. And he sold me these, little insoles to put in, and it told me to ice my feet, which it hasn't worked just yet. So I'm trying to figure out to avoid needles what I do with that.
If it feels worse with shoes on, then that usually means you have an aroma. So when the bones are pressed together by a shoe, it's irritating a nerve, and that nerve grows and makes a little, you know, gets a little swollen. So those neuromas, usually they give you a metatarsal pad, and then so that spreads the toes apart. And sometimes they can do an injection to shrink that nerve. And the worst case scenario, they can do a surgery and actually go in and remove that nerve so it doesn't feel like that anymore.
Would you be willing to do a surgery here in the man cave on one of the Danettes, Doc?
You know, I think we could pull that off, with some local anesthetic and a bullet to bite on. I think we could pull that off.
Do you realize that when I got the microfracture knee surgery, my doctor said, do you want to watch me do it? And he was going to give me a local and I could watch in the monitor. And I said, are you crazy? And he said, well, a lot of people don't want to be put under because of the anesthesia. And then you get nauseous when you wake up. He said, this is just a local and you could watch me send a drill bit through your knee. Do you do this? Do you allow people to stay awake?
I don't. I actually did stay awake for one of my surgeries when I was a resident and I was actually training to be an orthopedic surgeon. I watched one of mine. But with my patients, I just think I did it a few times and I had patients that basically never quit talking the entire case. And it was a distraction. And so I just put him to sleep now.
Why is every surgery a successful surgery on an athlete?
I call it the beautiful baby syndrome. You know, I mean, we do a surgery and that's our baby. You know, no one's going to say their baby's ugly.
But everybody's surgery is a successful surgery, it feels like.
Yep. We should have our hands bronzed after every case.
And do you make your patients put like, this is the knee that you're going to operate on? Like I had to take a Sharpie and I had to actually write my initials on it just so they asked me like six times, Are we doing your left knee?
Yeah.
Yes. And then I go, God, these guys are incompetent. They don't know what knee that they're doing. They wanted me legally to keep saying, no, it's my left knee. All right, here's a Sharpie. We want you to write your initials on the knee that we're going to cut on. Is that normal?
No, every case, the patient and the surgeon have to write with a Sharpie on the knee. And you're going to be asked by every single nurse and every anesthesiologist. I mean, it's the worst case scenario, right? I mean, if you operate on the wrong extremity, you know, it's write him a check.
Did you
there's no defense.
Did you ever do that?
Yeah, like I admit that to you.
Yeah, I know. No. Hey, Doc, always great to talk to you. We appreciate your time and hope you're well.
You bet. Thanks for having me on, Dan. Thanks, guys.
Dr. Mark Addix, a former Super Bowl champ with Washington. He went to Harvard. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. Is Doc Rivers set to join us there?
Sure.
And there he is, the 76ers head coach. And were you a football fan? Did you watch Super Bowl, Doc?
Yeah, I'm a Bears fan. Hoping that we get Deshaun Watson soon and we can win the Super Bowl soon. So, yeah.
But you're used to seeing – well, you got 1 year with the Bears.
85.
Yeah, that was it. Where were you in 85? 85, where were you?
I was playing for the Atlanta Hawks. I remember watching the Super Bowl with Scott Hastings, Tree Rollins, and Randy Whitman.
What did that team mean to you?
Oh, my gosh. It was the best. First of all, it was the best defense to ever play for one season in the NFL. I'm biased.
Yeah.
But I believe that. And their cockiness, you know, doing the Super Bowl shuffle video after game four. And then going out and win the Super Bowl. That was a pretty cool team. So it meant the world.
Who's the cockiest team you've ever been around, either on or played against?
I would say the old Celtics. You know, the Larry Bird, Mikhail, Danny Ainge, Parrish. They just act like they were better than everybody, and they were. But they didn't have to act like that.
You know, but what is it like, though, that confidence that certain teams have when they just walk on the floor?
Yeah, I call it the championship swagger. You know, we had it the year we won it in Boston. That following year, Dan, we had games where no Ray Allen, no Paul Pierce, no Kevin, and we still won the game. We had games down in the fourth quarter that you can just feel like our guys kept thinking, well, we're going to win the game at some point. The Golden State Warriors have it. All the teams that win it kind of get it that following year.
But the role of you, your coach, being the coach with a team like that, it felt like Rondo was the coach on the floor. But as the head coach, can you allow Rondo to be your coach on the floor?
Yeah, if it's the right coach, you know. And Rondo was the right coach. You know, Rondo was just brilliantly smart guy, driven, competitive guy. So when you have that, then you have the right person on the floor.
Do you care that Rondo and Ray Allen don't get along? Like, do you?
Yeah, I do. I do. You know, it's something that I'm hoping at some point will subside. It hasn't yet. You know, it's tough because these two guys won a title together. And in most cases, when you win something together, you know, I always liken it to having a blood transfusion. You're bound together for the rest of your life. And these guys are, but not in the right way. And it has not gone away yet. And it's just too bad.
It feels like there's been player empowerment in the NBA for a while. You can go back to, you know, Charles tried to join the Rockets, Karl Malone and Steve Nash or Gary Payton. LeBron certainly has done this. Now we see Tom Brady going to Tampa, bringing in players here. Harden wants out of Houston. KD and Kyrie get together. Is this good for sports?
I think it is. I've never had a problem with it. I'll tell you that. I do have a problem when players leave my team. I've never liked that.
Do you take it personally when they decide they want to get out?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You should. I mean, you put so much into these guys there, and you think you're doing the right thing. And then you get a call, hey, such and such wants to leave. And you take that personal. You don't take that, you know, that they want to go join another team and think that team is better. You even take that part personal. But I think, you know, listen, player empowerment is good in a lot of ways. Players for so many years really had no rights. You know, I was a player. And let's be honest, you have to play your way into greatness to be able to have that power. Because, you know, I was an average player, a little bit above average. I think if I had gone in and said, I want to get traded.
They would have.
They would have done it.
They're not sending you where you want to go.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. We're talking to Doc Rivers, the 76ers head coach. How does it go over in Philly with you being called Doc? And you know how 76er fans are. They're very territorial with the only Doc, and that's Dr.
Boy, J. I tell you, I love the fans there because they remind me a little bit of Boston. They have what you would call real passion. And so the building I'm living in, the doorman says, hey, you know I'm never calling you Doc. And I'm saying, no, I'm good with that. You know, I thought it was a joke. Dan, I've been there now, what, 6-7 months living there. And it's either, hey, Mr. Rivers, or hey, Glenn. He is actually serious. He will not call me Doc.
Was Doc still around when you got into the NBA?
Yeah. I want to say he played 2 or 3 years. You know, I never met him. And the first game we played him, Dominique gets injured. And Mike Fratello comes up to me and says, hey, you're our point guard, but I'm going to need you to guard, you know, Dr. J. I was thinking this is not going to go well. And what was great about it, we come to the jump ball circle and, you know, Dr. J reaches out and says, what's up, Doc? And so that was a really cool moment for me. That was really cool. I was happy you did that.
And you got to go back to college when Rick Majerus was your assistant coach. And were you at a basketball camp when you wore the Dr. J t-shirt?
Yeah, I was a freshman in high school, and Rick and Al McGuire, they didn't know my name. You know, they needed me to the Bucks were there playing an exhibition game for us, the campers. They only had 9 players, and they needed a 10th player. And Al McGuire stands up and says, hey, Doc, come down and play. And I'm sitting there, like, looking just like all the other kids, thinking, who is Doc? And he pointed at me. And I realized that I was Doc. And I found out after the game that Rick Majerus told him, man, that kid can really play. But I had a Dr. J t-shirt. So I told Rick and Hank and Al 50 times, my name's Glenn, my name's not Doc. And they didn't want to hear it, so I just had to live with it.
How did Dr. J do against your defensive prowess?
He did well. Yeah, he did very well. I don't know how well, but he did very well.
I remember we had Grant Hill on, and he said later in his career, you know, I was supposed to be this defensive stopper, you know, and he was a great offensive guy, but, you know, because he was limited with injuries, all of a sudden he was a defensive stopper. He's got to go out there and guard LeBron. And he said, I'm not a defensive stopper. But I had to have a role, and that was basically it.
Yeah, it's a tough role, I tell you, especially late in your career. When I was with the Spurs, you know, I was coming off the bench my last 2 years, and Bob Hill would put me in just to stop people. Vinny Del Negro, unfortunately, got people really warm by the time I got in the game. And I remember playing Allen Houston in Detroit, and I call a timeout after 3 minutes on the floor. And Bob Hill's going crazy. What'd you call a timeout for? I said, I can't guard this guy. I mean, he was absolutely killing me. And, you know, everyone's laughing in the huddle. They thought I was joking. And I said, I'm not joking. I can't guard him.
I love that you called a timeout, but also Vinny lets him score. You got to come in and try to, you know, shut it. He got him warm. Oh.
Yeah, we used to call Vinny kerosene, you know.
how's your team, by the way?
I love them. it's a very long, talented basketball team, figuring out still how to win, you know, and what winning looks like every day. They're young, Dan. I have to remind myself of that. Usually when you have a talented team that has a chance, you have a lot of veterans on it. This team, you know, other than Danny Green and Dwight, it's a really young basketball team. And so they're really fun to coach.
You know, and we look at this from the outside and we go, well, you should be able to help Ben Simmons shoot. Or, you know, it's like Lonzo Ball, we should be able to help him shoot. Is it harder to help somebody this late in their career? You know, when you're in your 20s, which sounds late that you haven't learned how to shoot or have that confidence. What role can you play in helping Ben be a better shooter?
Well, what you want him to do is first be a better player, you know, to show him what his talents can bring him. You know, for me, it's his passing, it's his defense, it's his playmaking, and then it's his shooting. I always start with the free throw line. You know, I think you gain a lot of confidence from that line. And, you know, our first conversation together, I told him, I want you to get on the line 10 times a game. I want you to make it to the foul line 10 times a game. And to me, that starts it, because when you see a player, Ben made 2 free throws late last night in the game. When you see a player willing to get fouled, that tells you that their confidence is starting to grow.
Yeah.
I think way too much were made about Ben Simmons and three-pointers. You know, I'm like, he doesn't need to be a three-point shooter. He needs to take them when they're there. You know, if you know what I'm saying. Jimmy Butler in the playoffs scored, what, 50 points last year without taking the three.
Yeah.
You know, so you can still be very effective, especially with Ben's body type.
What was that feeling like when you realized the Clippers didn't want to keep you?
Oh, it's a hard one, you know, because I know I can coach, you know. And so when you're with that team, and it was not an easy year last year, Dan. You're in the bubble. You know, half the guys didn't play most of the year. I mean, Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, I think, had 5 practices together the entire year. So you know you never got a chance to coach that real team. And get them to their potential. But whenever you lose a job, it's hard, you know, because you believe you could do the job. And especially with that team, like I looked at that team and thought, you know, healthy all year, I think we would have been hard to beat. But we never had that. And the bubble was a disaster. We had guys, you know, I think Trez missed 30 days in the bubble. Lou Williams had, you know, chicken wing gate, if you remember.
Wait, how mad did you get at him for going out to get chicken wings?
I was upset at him because, you know, the thing was he went back to Atlanta for a reason. There was a death in his family. And we really fought for him to go. And then I get a late night call about the chicken wings. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. And you know, but you got to move on with it. That's one thing in coaching and in life. Like the next day after me telling Lou how not smart that was, you're looking at your team like, I got to get this team together. So it puts you in a tough spot.
Have you been to Magic City, Doc?
Oh yeah, but it was a whole long, long time ago. I you know, I don't remember them having a kitchen. When I went.
Well, you probably went to Cheetah 3, maybe, or the Gold Club.
Yeah, that was back in the day of, you know, those clubs. I don't even know if they're open anymore. I'm assuming yes, because it's Atlanta. You know, it's funny, Dan, we're talking about Atlanta. And, you know, you remember the year we won in 2008? I made a comment after the Hawks beat us in, I think, game 6. I said, the city of Atlanta played wonderful today. And I was basically referencing, you know, we lost to the Hawks, but I have a strong suspicion that the city beat us.
The club circuit may have gotten a victory.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, but Miami would always worry. Did coaches worry about the Miami flu with
their
players?
Oh, gosh, yeah. Yeah, I used to make deals with our guys, you know, I would tell them that if we won, we were going to stay overnight that night. But the night before, just get some rest. Just get some rest. And sometimes it worked and sometimes it didn't.
Oh, you're the best. Hey, congrats on the season so far. We appreciate your time as always. Thanks for joining us.
Great seeing you, man.
Thank you, Doc. That's Glenn Rivers there. Doc Rivers, 76ers head coach. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com. Or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app.